Our session today is Success Codes for Leadership. And we're gonna run through a couple questions, but before we get started, I'd like to introduce the people I have with me. First of all, I have Sandy Hoffman, who is our Chief Inclusion and Diversity Officer. We have Debbie Dunham, who is our SVP of the Services Sales here in America. And we have Sri Devi Rao, Senior Director in the Services Platform Group. So, what is leadership? How do you become a leader? And how does leadership change? These are a couple of things that we'll talk about, and we're gonna leave some time for questions and answers for you to come back in, get a little bit more insight to ask your specific questions of the people that we have on our panel today. So let's get started. Debbie, how do you define leadership? What does that look like for you?
So for me, leadership is about the ability to garner support of others, to achieve a common vision or a common goal. And the way that you traditionally, I think, leaders successfully can do that is through influence. One of my favorite quotes is from Rear Admiral Grace Murray Hooper, who was one of the original first women in IT, actually. And she said, "You manage things, but you lead people." Mm. And so to me, that's always been something that stuck in my head from a long time ago. And I really believe that that whole approach of influencing others to go after a common vision or a common goal is a really important way that I personally have tried to define leadership and kind of measured, was I being successful or not? And I think about, you know, that ultimate ability to translate a vision into reality is the end result you get through good leadership.
That's true.
Can I add to that point there? Because at Cisco, we do quite a bit working around the 21st century and what the 21st century is really to look like. And one of the things that we know and where we're doing is leadership in the way a lot of people thought was hierarchical. Mm-hmm. And what we're finding today in most corporations is they're breaking down that hierarchy. So mm-hmm. Debbie, I agree. Like, influencing is one of the biggest skills that you can acquire that we believe. You don't necessarily be born with influence. It's a social influencing skill that you acquire. So I agree with anyone. If you're looking to upgrade your skill sets or your capabilities, I think you spot on when you talk about the influence and the power of influence that it has, especially in this 21st century.
Well, and Sandy, that comment you made, so my team, anybody who's ever worked in one of my organizations, I use this phrase all the time. I said, I think leadership can happen anywhere, anytime, any place, and any level. I do not think that title defers leadership. In fact, many times title just defers that you manage people, and you go back to that, managing is manage things, not people, right? And so I think that the whole thought process of where leadership can come from, I think leaders exist every single day in every part of our organizations, companies, teams, governments, and anybody can stand up and be a leader at any time they want.
Yeah. That sparks me on a comment I heard before, because you use the words manage and leadership is, I've heard this before, that management is about doing things right, and leadership is about doing the right things. So the decision-making power and the prowess you exhibit during that time is leadership.
Totally agree.
Great point. Thank you. Sandy, I'm going to give you the next one.
Perfect. I'm ready.
You're ready. Good. We all emulate or like to admire. What are a few leaders that you like to follow and admire and try to emulate in your leadership?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. There's three people in my life that have had huge impact and influence. The first one was my parents, of course, and I have to tell you, I came from a mother who was extremely loving and had a lot of compassion, and a father who was competitive, a driver, who always said, you know, you're Hoffman, you can do anything you want. And so, you know, when I had those horrible moments, I wasn't a great sports person, although I wanted to be. It was my mom on the side, you know, giving me the compassion as my father was telling me, let's go off and do some more hoops. So I think I owe a lot to them in helping me to build my character. Very early on in my 20s, I was very fortunate to go work for Steve Jobs, and I was actually part of his 100 Macintosh team, and I was brought on by, and he was amazing as a visionary and an innovator in his thinking and thought. You could never bring a PowerPoint presentation ever into his meetings, and you had to have a conversation, and you had to be really precise in what you did, but his perfectionism of what he wanted and what he expected and the drive that he wanted. And then the third person who I just recently was able to, and Deb, you might know as well, is I had the pleasure of meeting was Richard Branson. Mm-hmm. And if you ever have heard of Richard Branson's story and how he started Virgin, It is really, truly amazing, and this person who gives back all the time. But the idea of, and I remember him saying this all the time, oh, screw it, let's just do it. And a lot of times I think of my own job, you know, it's that, oh, screw it, let's just do it, because we overthink and overanalyze. So I think those were probably my biggest three influencers in
life. I'm not touching that. My list is nothing as good as that. I got nothing for that one. Brandon Jobs. I don't know, Sridevi, how about you? I feel like my grandfather, my cat.
I'm not sure if I can use that phrase in front of Debbie the next time I need to make a decision. I'm going to call Sandy for a little help.
When you talk about, I think, Sandy, going to what you said, I think people that you really empathize with or you're very close to or you just know them very emotionally very well, you almost subconsciously emulate them. And I believe, though my mother and father have very modest lifestyles, but it goes back to thinking about one thing that I've aspired to become, and as I get older, I think I see myself do this more than I did when I was a teenager, is just accept everybody for who they are and never undermine anybody just because you don't think they're of value to you today. And in today's language, that's diversity and inclusion. If that isn't diversity and inclusion, I don't know what else would be, because I get reminded of that in the workspace every day, is never undermine anybody's skill set or which functional organization they are or what title they have. True to what you said, Debbie, is because everybody is a leader, innovator, and a thinker in their own way. And the more you can admire and include them into what you have set out to do, I think you have a better impact.
Phenomenal point. And just to contribute to that thought, I think also when we don't see good leadership, we pick up on that as a lesson as well. So when there's someone not to emulate, then you have an opportunity to step up and lead as yourself. And it goes really back to what you ladies were saying of there's opportunities everywhere, and it's not the thing, it's the people. So,
can I just to add on to that point, and one of the things of, you know, I came into inclusion diversity because I got a great opportunity at Cisco. You know, if you complain about something long enough, they will put you in charge to fix it. So lesson number one. So I was very, I guess I was lucky in a lot of ways to land the job I had. But a lot of people don't realize that when Steve started the Dream Team, he looked beyond just the capabilities. He wasn't looking for innovators. He brought in composers, he brought in zoologists, and he brought in a very diverse look. And it wasn't your traditional, I want to go hire an engineer and I want to go hire a software engineer. What we look at, he looked beyond to be able to bring that imaginary and that creativity that he needed to. Now they just happen to be engineers, but he saw through them. And I think exactly what you're saying is you have to look through people and really understand not just what you see on the surface, but through what, and really be able to form yourself around really this diversity that sits within the world that exists today.
That's cool. Yeah. Great comment. Sridevi. How has your leadership style changed or developed through your career?
So I think I started my career in early 1992, and at that time, it was largely driven by authority, hierarchy, and I started working in corporate America. I'm originally from India, and being from a very colonial style of working in India, even though I've never actually worked there, but having experienced lifestyle over there, everything is very title-driven, hierarchical, and authoritative. So being in corporate America in my first job, I was hesitant to even call my manager by his first name, because nobody in India back in 92 would call anybody several years your senior by their first name. It's either Mr. or Uncle or Professor or Teacher. So calling my manager, and I remember his name forever, his name is Steve, and I just would avoid calling him Steve because it just made me very uncomfortable to call him. I felt like I should call him Uncle Steve or something. But I overcame that, when I became a manager, I had people in my team who were several years older than I was, so I started hiding how old I was, and I would just avoid that question, because if they knew I was as young as I was for my first manager job, that they wouldn't respect me somehow. So all these inhibitions were very self-created, and they were a reflection of my life and my experience. And what I've seen over the years is now it's just so flat and so completely agnostic to who you are, how old you are, where you came from, what degrees you held, and what pedigree you have. it's really what impact you drive. That's been a significant evolution that I feel, even though I've been in the industry for about 18 years, I have really seen that sea change go through. And the more I think about it, it's less about authority and hierarchy, it's more about influence. How are you able to, and I heard, I think both Sandy and Debbie use the words, how do you collaborate? How do you drive greater impact through influence? How are you passionately able to drive your point? That's a big change I've seen in terms of leadership traits. And other thing that occurs to me is really the modality and technologies, the modalities of how we communicate, right? If you think about, we talk about social network, of course, but even modalities, like you use your phone, you use your iPad, you use your computer, and you use just this, just plain public speaking. And all these different modalities, being global, speaking to different people with different ethnicities and cultures, has definitely changed in terms of leadership. Earlier, you just had one computer, which mm-hmm. you went to work for, so there was no such thing as working from home. And today, it doesn't matter. You could all be here by lunch. How many of you were doing your email and responding to important corporate responses, right? So that's been a significant change I've seen in leadership, to be effective regardless of where you are. And being in Cisco, any place, any time, any device, you're all this. Yeah. This is it.
We are the people that made that available to all of you. You can tell us how much you hate that later.
We're the blame. And for someone who works pretty closely with Sridevi in a few major products, she is the master influencer. We are constantly coaching each other on, okay, what's our next milestone on this? We had a conversation last night, so as much as we love the modality, and we use WebEx and IM and email and all of that, sometimes you just need you need this to take the next big step. So you're hearing it from really someone I respect as a master at that. All right, Debbie, the economy and the market has certainly changed through our careers. How does your leadership shift when the market is either favorable or not favorable?
So I wouldn't say that it shifts as much as what I choose to emphasize may have peaks and valleys. So a couple things that I try to keep very consistent. I talked earlier about the role of a leader is to really get people aligned around a common vision and then go translate that vision into reality. So I always stick with the theme of a consistent vision and the strategy to actually achieve that vision. I think depending on changes in macroeconomic conditions or market transitions or customer or partner changes, that where there might be a difference is tweaking the execution of that strategy. We're still going after the same vision. The general strategy or say the top priorities are still the same, but changes could take place at the execution level. I also think that in tough times, it's more important than ever to communicate with full transparency and to communicate often. So I'm someone who's known for speaking my mind and sharing pretty openly throughout my entire organization and with peers and cross-functional teams. But I think when there are tough times macroeconomically or anything like that, that it's actually more important to be even more open and more transparent and explain things to people. Explain the what, explain the why. If you've had to make a tough decision in a company, if you've had to make some tough trade-offs that may not make sense at first blush, explain the why to people. I think many times, once people understand the why, they can get much more comfortable with a change. If you don't tell them why, they'll make up all kinds of crazy assumptions. I mean, they'll think the worst, right? It's human nature, right? You'll think the worst. So I try to be really transparent on explaining the why and then what are the implications of that and what does it mean to people. The other things that I would say that I try to keep very consistent, I have a whole thought process that I call personal leadership because, again, I don't think it's because of the position or your title, but it's all about who you are as a person and how you show up authentically and personally. I spend a lot of time writing handwritten thank you notes. I know it's an old school thing to do, but after 30 years in the world of IT, I write approximately 100 to 120 handwritten notes a quarter. And it's astonishing to me, you guys, the response that I get from that. I have people write me page-long emails thanking me for writing them a thank you note. Right? And so I find that, again, if you're in times of change, if you're trying to drive a lot of change,
personally recognizing and appreciating people who are leading from the front, who are leaning in, who are taking risks, who are really making themselves vulnerable. I work really hard to make sure that I recognize that at all levels of the corporation, not just in my team, but in other parts of the organization that we collaborate with. The other piece that I would say is you got to think about your balance of external versus internal. Any tough time or time of change, it's really easy to get super internally focused. Get out of the office, go talk to a customer, go talk to a partner, talk to anybody besides the people you work with every day. So, and frankly, that's good for your business anyways, if you go out and talk to customers and partners, right? Maybe they would buy something from you. And being in sales, you know, that's what I get paid to do. So I try to actually rotate more externally when there's some tough times going on and spend time with customers and partners. And then finally, I think the last thing I would say is that I think it's really important that you address problems quickly. So don't let anything, you know, kind of take a long time. Don't let it brew. Don't let it, you know, develop to where everybody knows about it and they're all sitting there saying, why aren't you doing something about it? And so I think that you've got to address problems and make change quickly to move forward whatever the vision or the strategy is that you're trying to execute.
Very good.
You know, and I think to that point, too, women have a tendency, and this is stereotyping a bit, so, you know, I apologize for that. But
it's
women,
okay, you're the IND chicken.
That's right, I can do it. But women have a tendency to be collaborative
yes.
in our approach and things that we do, and at times it has to be decisive. And when you're collaborating and when you have to be really decisive, and I think you really had talked about that as well. One of the other things, too, that Debbie talked about, and early in my career, someone had told me that behind every employee is a family. Mm-hmm. And it's really recognizing the family for what they're having to go through as well, too. So what we have done, and I've made it a part of, is not just sending out the thank you notes of people, but every year I send a holiday letter out to the families. And I actually recognize the employees and what they've contributed to and the impact that they've made. And that has gone a big way of bringing the family into your organization and your family and things. So I think there's this idea of really seeing through, again, this person and what they are, knowing that there's more than just that employee coming to work and engaging that family. A lot of times, too, if we had people who were going to be going out for like a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, we would send things to the family's house, you know, care packets of little things, of movie tickets and things mm-hmm. like that, so that they really felt that there wasn't. And I think it's just those small little things that go a long way in really bringing your teams together.
So Lynn, you referred to the term macroeconomics, and it makes, so just how many of you have seen the movie The Office? And I just happened to see it again just a week ago, and it reminds me of the memo. Do you remember the memo that gets sent out, a typewritten memo that goes circulates the office? And the whole term macroeconomics has more meaning today in today's world because we all know so much information. You're all exposed to so much information. So earlier, somebody sends out a memo and you just follow the memo. Why do you ask questions? It's not, there's no asynchronicity of information. There's actually no information. Today, there is asynchronous information, which means different people know different amounts of information to a different level. And so you panic. Anytime you see something and you don't fully understand, you panic. And I love the way you were talking about it, Debbie. Just level the playing field. Explain it in a way that is sinks in and you're empathetic and you're relating with the audience and with your teams and with your organization. So it just allows for that human factor where if you want to instill a change, you actually just are all part of the same organization, knowing same information, at least perceived as same information to help drive that change.
Or at least have the same context around the
information. Same context, yeah.
I agree. Yeah,
very good. Sandy. How does leadership show up Monday through Friday? And how do you, what do you do differently as a leader rather than an individual contributor?
Yeah, funny how you say Monday through Friday.
Like we don't work on the weekends.
I found that interesting. No, I think, you know, The thing that I have found out as well is this idea of patience, which I've never had a lot of. And I'm learning as I'm getting older. Wisdom and patience are two things that they say as you get older within that. I think, you know, it's really important to really understand those teachable moments. And you know, I was so encouraged by Sally talking about those teachable moments. Mm. We all have them, and sometimes we just want to kind of brush them underneath the table, and we don't want to acknowledge them. We acknowledge them as our failures or moments in life we're probably not proud of. And I've learned to be proud of what I have referred to, or my father helps to encourage me to say, they're teachable moments in life. And so I think it's really holding on to those moments and understanding what you could do different and take that moment to stop, listen, and really understand what you did. The other thing about it that I've learned to do is stop talking and start listening. You know, they said God gave you one mouth and two ears for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, that moment of time, you have to get out. I get out of the office all the time, and I'm around, and I really need to listen because it's amazing. I run IND for the organization, 70,000 people. I have, and in this room I have several, I have probably thousands of people, including these two lovely women next to me, who are true advocates and champions, and they are telling me all the time what's going out onto the field. So I don't have to hire consultants or do these things. I have, if I just listen to the people that are coming to me, I have all the resources and support that I could ever do to really make a difference into this world. And so I think it's that idea of constantly listening all the time, you know, and be able to take those teachable moments in.
Great. My husband tells me that I have all the patience in the world because I have every bit of patience I was born with because I've never used any of it.
That's funny. I like that.
Jim tells everybody that. You can steal it, Trudy.
Write that down.
I love it.
I was worried about how many people in the room work for me and they had the patience saying, shh.
Or there's codes in the back. Back
when they talk about me and patience. They must know me.
Sri Devi, we've spoken about leadership in the context of the career, but what about outside of the office and not in the career life?
You mean in my personal life?
Well, I would love some dirt there.
So the question is, how does leadership work for you in your personal life? Not very well. I must tell you, and inspired by Sally today, I think it's okay to admit a few defeats and what you learn from it, a few failures, if you will. So I have a 16-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old son, and I had a moment of epiphany when my son, when he was about 4 or 5 years old, he came home from school on a Friday, and he said, "So, Mom, what's the plan for the weekend?" My children can't do anything if there is no plan. I'm like, screw planning. I mean, why do I have to plan all the time? And like Monday to Friday, that's all I do, plan. Like, can I have some downtime? But no, I can't, because that's not me. And I bet that's not most of any of the women who are here. You wouldn't be here if you were just laid back and go with the flow and we'll figure it out. You wouldn't be here. So we are planners, and we like to envision what's coming, and we like to get prepared for it to the best we can. And as you get older, of course, you learn to calm down a bit and not have to plan everything to the most infinite detail and freak everybody out. It's like, yes, I'm a planner, but if everybody else around me feels uncomfortable with me planning everything and being on top of everything, then I haven't really achieved much in my personal life. I don't want my family and my loved ones, who are actually the harshest on you, as you all know, is I don't want them thinking that it's so difficult to be around me because I'm such a planner and everything has to be efficient and productive. And, you know, this is, you could have done this and you could have planned your grocery trip and then this and then that.
Why would engineer and you're coming out, Trina. Yeah. There was a much more efficient route through the grocery store, I just want to point out.
But I'm the same person who goes to return the jeans in the mall and goes to every store but the return store and buys more shopping bags and goes back home. So there's the girl side too. But to answer the question, in personal life, for the longest time, I don't think it has worked really well. I've had my dad, who I'm very close to. I'm the only child, and I'm extremely close to my father, and he's always said, don't talk to me like you talk to one of your employees at work, and don't wag your finger at me. I promise I wasn't wagging my finger, but it made it sound like I was. And this was all in my 20s, early 30s, and I realized I just really need to think differently about how I deal with my personal relationships. And I believe I'm a better person today than I was, but it's a constant journey, and I promise to be on the continued journey to be a better person with my loved ones more than anything else.
So, Sharita, I'm with you. I have to confess that line blurs between, you know, leadership at work and leadership at home. So, you know, I've been married 31 years, and my husband constantly reminds me that he does not work for me.
Yeah.
He says, contrary to popular opinion, I am not one of your employees. I do not have a Cisco
performance
badge.
Review.
And he does not ask me about when his performance review is coming. And he also reminds me not to use the imperative tone with him.
Oh, goodness.
So I know I crossed the line. So I'm with you, Sridevi. I am a recovering control freak. I don't think I'm doing very well at that either. So I also like to make lists and organize and, you know, explain what we are going to do with our weekends. So I suffer from the same affliction as Sridevi. I am trying to get better at it. I'm late now sometimes on the weekends. Freaks my husband out. He's like, where are you? Why are you not here? I thought we were doing this at 4:32. I'm working on it. I'm with you. I'm working on it.
But it also, Lynn, it reminds me of work-life balance early, and I think, Sandy, this may be a topic that you hear a lot. Everybody asks about work-life balance. They never ask a man that question, right? They always ask a woman that question, how does your work-life balance? I don't have one. If I did, I wouldn't be here. But it's really, thanks to technology again, there's a lot more work-life integration than there is balance, because balance means you have to take from one and give to the other, but integration means somehow it all blurs, which has the other problems, which Debbie just said, the lines are so blurred that you just conflict with each other all the time. But as we get smarter, we just make the right choices at the right time.
Yeah, that's what Padmashree Warrior, who's our chief strategist and CTO at Cisco, she's been asked that question often. She's got how many followers on Twitter?
Over a million.
I mean, she's really an impressive individual, and she gets asked that question a lot in interviews about work-life balance. And that's absolutely. There is no such thing. It's about integration, and it's the only way we can all run our lives, because you can't trade one off for the other, because somebody always loses in a trade-off.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You know, funny enough too. So I learned about work-life integration from my nephew, who is 22 years old and just got a job at Cisco. So he is an avid kiteboarder. If you guys don't know, kiteboarding is probably one of the most popular sports that are coming up. And he swears he's going to be a pro someday. Like, he is just convinced on this thing.
It's just temporary.
So what he wanted was, when he came out of California to one of the top engineering schools, and he had three offers at the start of his senior year, with Cisco being one. I mean, in fact, what he also shared with me on some of the top universities, that the sports agencies are now going after the MBA students, and they are becoming agents for students, for corporations to compete. He had three offers going in. One was from Google, one was from Apple, and one was from Cisco. And so Aunt Sandy, you know, what do I do? And I said, I have to remove myself from this situation, knowing that I work at Cisco and such. And the offer from Google was $30,000 more. My dad said, are you crazy? You take Google, right? I mean, they're going to give you $30,000 on the mark. He chose Cisco because of the flexibility and the ability that he could really, truly integrate his work. Mm-hmm. And what he does is every Friday, because he was a Cal Poly down in Southern, it's probably between Southern Cal and San Luis Obispo, is he takes every Friday and he kites. So he takes his meetings from the cafe, and then he is on the ocean kiteboarding from, you know, and then he'll come back during the break and take other meetings. And the flexibility, and I'm happy to say a company that be able to go do that. So he taught me the idea of work-life integration, that I don't have to be in the office and take these things, and I can follow my own passions. So with that in mind, I have actually taken up kiteboarding.
Bravo.
I'm not good at it. He is still teaching me. But who knows, every Friday I might be out, if you guys ever call me out in California on the beaches.
Very good. Kudos to you. Debbie, back to you. What advice would you offer for someone who's moving into a leadership position?
Run. No.
And fast.
Yeah. Run fast. So I have one old standby that I'll share with you guys. So there's a book. It's called The First 90 Days. It's been out forever.
It's a great
book. I have this book. It's got like all these post-it notes in it. It's got everything highlighted. Every single time I take on a new role, I go back to that book.
I do too.
It's got a list of things that you should do as a new leader in the first 90 days, no matter whether it's your first leadership position or your 20th leadership position. It's an easy read, you guys. It gives you this really handy roadmap. I can't tell you how many people I've given that book to. And by the way, I download all my books to my iPad, but this is a book I have hard copy because literally there's a lot of templates and things in there, and I have all these keys and post-it notes in it. So that would be my first piece of advice. The next thing I would say is listen and ask questions. Spend more time listening and asking questions, to your point earlier, than telling people what you're going to do as the new leader, because they know more than you. They were already there. Build an incredibly robust network. You heard Sally talk about this today. And make sure your network is internal and external, because the way you get things done is through people that you know, period. It's how work happens in America. It's how you fix problems. It's how you find opportunities. It's how you find your next job. Build a network, a robust network, a diverse network, and a network that consists of internal, external, customers, suppliers, partners. I would tell you, this is something I've always lived by. I actually got this from my grandfather. Know more about your business than anybody else. Mm-hmm. Period. Whatever that business is, whatever you're responsible for, know more about it than anyone else in the entire organization, including your CEO. Because they're going to come ask you really hard questions, and when you have the answer, that's a pretty impressive thing to do. The next thing I would say is build your team, because even though it's great to be a new leader, it's really not all about you. It's really all about your team. Because who you surround yourself with is a reflection on who you are, and whether they're a good reflection on your brand or a bad reflection on your brand is very important to your ability to be successful as a leader. Because everybody's gonna look at the team you build and put around you. And if that's a team that garners respect or enthusiasm or passion or whatever you're trying to drive with your team, that will reflect well on you as a leader, much more important than what you do as an individual. It's really about the team, it's not about you. I would also advise you guys to have what I call a personal board of directors. So early on in my career, which I started over 30 years ago when I was very young, obviously, I used to think if I could just have Joe as my mentor or Sally, I could learn everything, right? That person could teach me everything. Well, what I learned is that to be successful as a leader, you have to have a really diverse group of people to go to. So I built over the years what I call my personal board of directors. And they're more around people that have specialties or experiences or skill sets or knowledge or expertise. So I have somebody I go to if it's anything about a financial or a P&L. There's another person on my board of directors that has to do with growing a partner channel. There's another person that's about marketing. And so I have this thick group that I think of as my personal board of directors. The best way to build that is through that robust network that you've built, right? And so have this board of directors that are people that you can go to for coaching, for guidance, for venting, for a place to, you know, go be yourself when you have to be, but build a board of directors. I would then tell you never, ever, ever stop learning, ever. Sri Devi talked about, you know, how much data and information is available to all of us. Read about your industry, read things outside your industry, you know, go to blogs, go just always learn every day. Make it a point in your career as a leader to learn something. And by the way, sometimes the most valuable learnings come from the people in your own organization. And then finally, what I would share is that your title, the fact that you manage people or that you lead something, does not automatically get you respect or support. You have to earn that. And so I would tell you guys to show up humbly every day and do everything humanly possible to earn the respect and support of your team, because once you have that, you can accomplish anything.
Very good. Should have your sanity. Yeah. I love goosebumps for the last one.
How do you follow that?
Goosebumps. I'll give you both an opportunity. Do you guys want to contribute any of that, Pat?
Debbie, your words again remind me of what my father said, is humility is the best jewelry ever worn, right? I mean, if you let humility get go into the room before you would enter a room, that's really the brand you want to follow. That's who you want to be how you want to be associated with. Leadership as a trait to me has always been more around integrity. Be very authentic and integral to what you believe in and what's your passion. And I think Lynn alluded to an example of how Lynn and I started working together. And I have no sales experience. I have absolutely no sales background. And here I am telling a salesperson what they should be doing. But very quickly, I realized that I shouldn't be telling. I should be actively listening. And that's all I did. My relationship with Lynn, and if you know Lynn, you'll know you'll be listening more than telling. But.
Touché.
So I was actively listening and listening and listening, and I can't even begin to tell you how much I have evolved and I have learned over the last 1.5 to 2 years about a whole different part of Cisco. And I've been with Cisco a really long time. I've been an engineer. I've been in marketing and product management. I've gone off to India and did an international gig for 2 years. I've done the whole different experiences with different roles and different leadership roles in different countries even. And when I came back and I took on this role, working with the sales organization and in services, both very new things to me. Services was new, sales was new, and working with them as my constant stakeholder was a new experience and a very enriching experience. I learned a lot, and today I'm in a position where I can actually influence and co-architect, come up with things collaboratively. Again, that's one of my favorite terms, is how much you can do with collaboration. Because I believe Mr. Boudin was talking about it this morning, is we always underestimate the power of who. Yep. The more you know, regardless again, where in the food chain they are, the more you know. And I don't worry about, oh, I'm a so-and-so director, I have to only talk to another person at that level. I will talk to a associate engineer if I have to, if I know that they have the subject matter expertise, which will educate me to make the right decision. And if they are the pivotal point, like the tipping point, if anybody read the book Tipping Point, you want to influence the influencers, right? You want to influence the right people in the organization who then can carry your message forward.
And now we've converted Sri Devi to the dark side of sales.
Very good.
Now, I think you guys are right on. I think there's a couple other things too. Is you have to build trust within the team, and trust I think is really important. You have to be able to give it in order to be able to receive it, and you have to be consistently in the trust that you build. The other thing, and Debbie had talked about this before, and we did a lot of work on this, really about how do you take collaboration up to that next level in really creating what we call inclusive collaboration. And that's where we really centered around these four cornerstones. And this time we did work with a consultant. I had to be, and we trademarked it off of them. But we really came down to, I don't care where you are, who you are, anywhere around the world, that at the end of the day, people want to come in because they want to feel welcomed. They want to feel like they're giving value back. They want to be able to be heard, their voices, and respected. And so if you could go into your rooms and meetings, and many times is I'm asked to come in and just consult and listen in on meetings. And I have to tell you, there is an app. There's an app for everything. And there is a productivity app that you can go in, and you can start out with your meeting. And by just things doing, it will tell you how productive your meeting was. Most times they are in the negative, because you have to have a meeting for a meeting because you didn't have the right people, or the people in the room, one person was actually over-dominating compared to someone else, another person just checked out of the room. And so just being observant and really understanding, and it's always great when you put an app down and then you just tell people of, you know, this is how productive our meeting was. It can change things really very, very quickly. So I think in my mind, I think it really is important to really looking at building that trust, but really bringing that inclusive collaboration to the table in everything we go off and do. And then finally, the one thing, and don't underestimate it, social media can be your best friend or your worst enemy. And you know, I coach all the time. I go on college campuses, and I'm like, I coach my nephews. They're like, well, we took the picture off. I'm like, it never goes off. So never. You just put a billboard out in Manhattan, and it's going to live with you for the rest of your life. And so I think in that mind is be very, very careful. I find social media to be amazing into getting to networks that are one degree of separation of someone that I need to get to instantly. And there's times when people are friending you and posting pictures of you at a party that you probably didn't want to be posted on. So be very careful with that.
My first PR training, they said, if you don't want it on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, don't do it.
Yeah.
So remember that with everybody who has a cell phone, wherever you are.
Yeah, that also, there's a book called Career Warfare. If anybody hasn't read that yet, it's about building a personal brand. And there's the same dialogue in there, which says, if you're a conference like this or a social offsite or a company offsite, you're never really offsite. You're always on stage, and there is somebody always watching you and noting how you behave and what you do. So that second glass of wine, or maybe fourth for some, it's not worth it. So always know where is your balance.
Wonderful thoughts. Sandy, are there things that you remind yourself of to be a good leader?
Yeah, you know, the one biggest thing, and this is something that I grew up with. I my parents, although they're very successful now, but at the time when I was growing up, my parents, probably a year or two after I was born, declared bankruptcy. And so we were, you know, forced out of the house and having to go live places and really learned. I never really saw it because they never really experienced into it. But the whole idea of a servitude and really your the idea of, and I don't want to use the word servant as much, but you are there to help bring other people up. And it was this pay it forward. I had a lot of people pay it forward in my career and a lot of people pay it forward in my personal life. And I knew that no matter what I did and why I went so much into inclusion and diversity, because it was the idea that I could pay it forward for someone else. And here's a perfect example. We were in a, I was asked to come into this meeting to work on this project, and it was to bring 10 million girls who don't have access to education forward, and they wanted Cisco to be a sponsor, but also a technology partner. And we brought these girls in from very rural parts of Africa to come into our offices, and we had telepresence, and we had around Africa and Europe and the United States. And if you guys don't know telepresence, a high-end video conferencing, high definition, and it will follow the voices. Well, the girls were actually trying to reach because they had never seen technology in their life, and they're trying to reach through to us in the room.
It's life-size. So they thought the people were really there on that screen.
So, and they're laughing. The microphones keep switching to person, and they couldn't understand how these things were switching. Anyhow, when we kind of finally got everybody settled down and we started to talk to them about the importance of the project and what it meant for them, they were talking about every day that they were going down to the wells to collect water. And their whole idea was whether they were going to be raped or not. Mm-hmm. And what we started also to find out in the LGBT community in Africa, they have a thing called corrective rape. And so the women there who are lesbians will be raped repeatedly to try to correct them. Oh. And so we had found all these horrific things that were going on. And the men in the room, and I was really taken back, like, we're going to do this. And the men in the room were actually really beginning to tear up. These were executives that are hardcore, in your face. And they walked out and they're like, this is something we've got to do. This isn't even a question. This is really about paying it forward. And I think in my mind, although that's an extreme, it's really that ability, and that I've always said, is that whole servitude and who we are. Because if we bring everybody up, we will all. So a lot of times I won't take the light. I will have my team take the light, and I will sit behind it, and I'll do a lot of the coaching. And a lot of people say sometimes you have to lead. And you know when to lead, know when to follow. And I think that is important. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can always follow. I do think you have to lead. But begin to pay for it somewhere in your life and understand that. The other thing is, what legacy do you want to leave? And I always ask someone that, because you're in a position in the world that is changing. We are going into the 21st century, and every one of you in this room, everyone, you're going to be part of this revolution of change that is going to occur. And so you have to look at yourself tonight when you go to bed and say, what legacy do you want to leave behind you? And then begin to live your dream and your passion and your legacy.
Thank you.
Very well said.
Should Abby or Debbie, you want to take a pass? You're good?
Don't mess with perfection.
So final thoughts on leadership from the panel. And then we'll open it up for Q&A.
I guess the last thing I would share you guys is it's probably the most rewarding thing you can do in your life. When you're able to do the kinds of things that Sandy just talked about, right? When you're able to influence others and change people's lives. You know, at Cisco, we believe that it's our job to change the way the world works, lives, plays, and learns. And the ability to be a leader who has an impact like that around the world, in my own backyard, with my team, with my customers and my partners, it's one of the most rewarding things that I've ever gotten to do in my entire life, and I'm very grateful that I get to do it for the amazing company that I work for.
I would probably leave you with, much as I said, leadership hasn't worked very well in my personal life, but that was very early in the beginning. But allow leadership and your personal traits of high organization, productivity, integrity, and passion and empathy to extend into other walks of life. Whether it's, I did a business school course which talked about total leadership, where you have to identify the four domains of what constitutes your life, yourself, your work, your school, and your community, and yourself, sorry, your community and yourself. And if those are the four main domains, just think about, are you really spending enough time and energy on each of those domains that really make the whole you, and how do you bring your wholesome to work? Some of us are so busy catching up with our everyday reactive requirements that we sometimes forget to do the right things in the community or to your own self. I mean, yoga, meditation, these are the common self things a lot of people do. But take a minute to think about, and that's leadership too, because if you think doing that yoga or meditation is important to you, being capable of carving the time out for yourself and not making excuses saying there's a meeting in the morning or there was this in that afternoon, just committing to doing it and bring that whole leader to work.
And I think the last thing I would say, and this is, maybe you guys will associate this or not, is take chance. So, you know, when they came back with a job description for me at Cisco and they said, you know, I was complaining about our lack of inclusion and diversity, which they said, we want you to take the job. And I said, well, what is the requirements? And they listed 10 things. And I said, well, I only have two of those 10 things, so obviously I can't make a chief diversity officer. I had to have the person at the time beg me that, yes, you can, and you are okay, and you know what, it's okay. And they said, if there was a man in here, they would see one of those 10 traits, and they would automatically say, I'm good, let's go. Yeah. So I think in a lot of times is we have to be able to take chances in our life and step forward. And to be able to know, and you know, I'm fortunate is we get to work very, very closely with Sheryl Sandberg, and she and I were having this conversation, and she said to me, this was her advice to me, fake it till you can make it.
Yeah.
And I have lived that, to fake it till I can make it in a lot of ways, but having the confidence, I think, as well as women to step forward in that.
All right, we have a few minutes left, so I do invite the crowd. We have microphones on either side if anybody would like to ask the panel a question. Go ahead and step to the microphone.
The one I talked about? It's called The First 90 Days.
By Michael Watkins.
There you go.
Thanks, Rita. Oh, I think we all did.
He's an engineer, by the
way. Oh, he's an engineer. Of course he is, Rita.
She wiggled
that
in.
All the time.
Go ahead.
You guys talked a lot about influencing and said that's an important skill to learn. Do you have any suggestions for how somebody could go about learning that? Is it just a matter of practice? Is it?
I do think practicing helps. I think what you've got to decide is, so the way I've always used influence is, where are we trying to get to, or what goal do we want to achieve, or what's the end result or the outcome we want to get to, and then I have to figure out who do I need to help make that happen. And once I figure out the who, then I figure out what's in it for them. Because they're not, well, sometimes they might do it just to help you, but usually people, being people, are going to be motivated by something that's in it for them. Maybe it helps move one of their goals forward. Maybe it takes a project their team's been working on and helps shine a spotlight on it, or there's a lot of reasons. So figure out where you're trying to go, or the goal, or the objective, or the outcome. Who do you need to help you get there, and what's in it for them? And then start using that thought process as you go and engage with them. And you basically show them why it's great for them to be involved. And suddenly, you've got people moving through influence versus title or position or because of who they report to.
Question to you?
Yes, I was wondering if you have any advice for me or for anyone in my situation. I just recently took a leadership role a year ago for an IT organization, and I'm the only female on an all-male leadership team. And originally I thought I would fit in great with that because I tend to work well with men anyway. But I have found that there's been a lot of like trials along the way, thrown under a bus a couple times, had credit taken for ideas that I pitched, you name it. I'm sure you've seen it. And so, you know, I've even had sexist comments made to me in front of employees. And so I'm just... If any advice that you have, like to continue on, or you know, to rise above it, or to find a way to earn the respect of my male peers and actually be treated as a leader like you know they are.
Well, I don't know if those are folks whose respect I'd want to earn based upon the way that you described they treated you. You have to decide whose respect you want and who's you. Who do you need to get along with to get your job done and for you to be successful? So that's a trade-off that only you can make, I would say. Second of all, I go back to something Sherita said earlier. It's all about results. Because at the end of the day, I always say to my team, the facts are the facts. People can wish something, they can want something, they can, you know, try to pretend it's different. But at the end of the day, the facts are the facts. And the results that you deliver will speak for themselves regardless of the environment that you operate within. Now, it may be personally challenging to operate in an environment like that, but I would first focus on results because you can't deny results. The second thing I would suggest is spend more energy with your team, because that's where you can have influence with them. Because the other thing that will speak volumes about you is the fact that you have a team that follows and supports you. So regardless of what your peers may be like, if the team's following and supporting, I think that's another area that you can kind of make a difference. And the last thing I would tell you is, don't take any crap, stand up for yourself.
Thank you.
Very cool. I would add one thing to that is sometimes if you don't notice it, maybe nobody else is noticing it either. And this is not to dilute your current situation, but I've been asked this question several times where I believe many times it's us, ourselves, noticing that you're the only woman in the room or you're the only female in a big discussion. If you don't notice it and you're not carrying a chip on your shoulders, most often they won't either. It's just be yourself, be authentic, be driven by results. And just keep your chin up. I mean, you have nothing to be ashamed of, right?
Yeah.
And
you're in that job for a reason. People thought you could do it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, that, and this is something, by the way, IT and women in engineering and IT, right, we know that there's very small. So we always say look for role models that you can turn around and emulate or begin to do. There's amazing. Debbie's one of the role models that we stand up to a lot of our technical women. The other thing is, too, is you got to find, you know, women have to support women, and you have to find that there is incredible men out there that are advocating for women. Yeah. And so getting in front of them and say, when you see this behavior, I need your help. And it's amazing, they will step up. So right. When they do see bad behavior, but you got to just turn around and say, you know, can you help me there? And you'd be surprised how much people would.
Well, and I think you did the right thing, but to Sandy's thought process is that since that person's an advocate, you know, ask them to watch. You ask them to watch, but if they see it, then I would say ask them to, at the moment it occurs when they see it, ask them to make a comment, right? Because that'll be helpful.
Very good.
Good luck.
Question to you.
Hi, my name is Veera Venigalla. I'm from Rackspace Hosting. I have three questions.
Good for you.
Overachieving.
First of all, the first one is, have you come across in your professional career that you felt you are fitting in to a team versus belonging to a team? The way I felt belonging is you are authentic and you feel the trust is everywhere in the atmosphere, and fitting in, you feel that you are holding back some of the good information because you feel that you don't know how they will be received, and especially you feel that there's no two-way trust. You're trying your best, but the two-way trust is not developed yet, or mm-hmm. How do you deal with this type of situation? Any tips, strategy?
This reminds me of the comment, I forget who made that this morning, that being invited to a party versus being asked to dance.
Speaker. Yeah.
Verna made that comment, is that it almost sounds like a diversity and inclusion stereotypical question, because it, fitting in is, you have to, it's a square peg in a round hole, right? You just have to shave off a few pieces to just fit in, but you actually probably left a few good pieces behind. But inclusion is taking the wholesome there and making a difference. So if your question is more around how do you be more inclusive versus, I think it takes two. Your environment has to be somewhat capable of taking that in. But it's a lot to do with you too, right? I mean, you don't have to hold yourself back. If you're confident, and again, always results driven. I mean, everyone over here will say the same thing, is if you can drive impact and you can show the results, there's not much else to talk about. you just become associated with those results.
And I would say early in my career, I tried to fit in and would subjugate, you know, some traits, or I wouldn't say what I was really thinking. It's like the cartoons, there was a bubble over my head. I never said that stuff. I just thought it. But I would tell you, I waited much too long before I, you know, brought my authentic self, to Sridevi's point. Just be yourself, right? And because you'll always feel awkward if you're not, and it's just a challenging situation. So I would say, instead of trying to fit in, be who you are and show your value.
Yeah, you know, Deloitte, if you guys haven't read it, Deloitte just released a research on covering. And they will show that most people cover. And in fact, they will show that the white male will actually cover 48% of their time at work. Covering in itself is if you're not be able to bring your full self to work, the engagement and level, you will what they call brown out. And so what it does is you actually start to disengage, and there's a brownout factor. If you sit there long enough, you will go into burnout. So you have to understand when you are browning out, and you'll see that in the performance, or you're not engaging as much as you can. You have to catch yourself, and you have to say, I have to change something when I'm in this brownout. And sometimes you have to get out of the environment.
Yeah, you may have to change.
You know, no matter what happens, you just got to get out.
Right. Thank you. And the other one is, what are your thoughts on leadership? Like, I believe every person is a leader, mm-hmm. even if you do not have anybody reporting to you.
I agree.
So how do you influence, or what are your favorite tips or strategies for influencing without folks reporting to you? And you are a leader. You still have to do collaboratively across the teams to get the work done.
So I would back to, the, I think, our first or second question about, you know, a project or whatever, go find something you can, whether you own it or not, be in charge of creating an outcome for, and then go find the people that need to be part of that and figure out why they want to do it and go influence them. And then I think the other thing is, pick something that you're passionate about or something that's wrong. Look around your organization. You see something that needs to be fixed and nobody's fixing it, raise your hand. Say, I want to go fix this, right?
Never know what might happen.
Then you could end up just like Sandy here. But raise your hand and say you want to go fix something, and then bring together the right group of people that you've got to, you know, have influence occur across to go fix it. You'd be surprised at the outcome that might come your way. But it's another great way to, even though you're not physically having a team of people report to you, that you can be a leader about something you're passionate about, something you want to drive change on, and then go show the company how you can execute it.
Okay, thank you. And the last question, it's my favorite question, which is not kind of work-related too, but what is your favorite quote or quotation which inspired you in growing up into your professional leadership career?
So mine was Steve Jobs, who always said, put a dent in the universe. So I'm here to put a dent in the universe.
Mine's something that I made up many, many years ago when I was often the only woman on a team or the only woman in a room. And finally, there started to be some other women showing up. And because when I started, there was not a lot of women in IT at all. And so when I got to a room where there was more than two of us, I brought the women together in a corner and I said, we're going to have a secret club. It's called the CIC Club. And it stands for Chicks in Charge. So I'm all about everything we can do to have lots of chicks in charge.
I like that.
That should be our motto.
So my favorite quote, which is also on my blog, and some people think I said it. Actually, I didn't. Thomas Jefferson said it, is vision without execution is hallucination. So I live and die by it. So my children also tease me about this now. So Mom, no execution, you're hallucinating.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, I work for a large corporation. You keep our lights on, so keep going. We are very dependent on Cisco. So I have always been a very driven person, and my first several years in the company, always get every 18 to 20 months a promotion. Suddenly, I've been in this position for 3 years, and I don't know where to go because I love my job, but then I also want to take risk to move to the next level. So can you share to us an example where you took a risk and it was a good outcome?
Yes, we won't talk about the bad outcome one. So I'll give you guys an example. So I've been in sales the bulk of my career, right? I've been a sales rep, a sales manager, a sales leader, some shape, form, or fashion. Had a couple of slight forays over into marketing, which is very closely adjacent to sales. And the job I had previous to this one, the corporation came to me and asked me to move to operations. And I said, operations, sales, you know, one of these things is not like the other. I was asked by one of our executive vice presidents, and I asked them, why would you like me to come do this? Now, there are some people in this room that would admit that I am compulsively anally organized and very process-driven, which isn't like the normal sales personality. And the problem we were trying to solve was the way that we did business with our customers and our partners was very complex. People that were trying to get quotes, people that were trying to place orders, people that were trying to get things shipped, fix a problem with an invoice. It wasn't our strongest suit, I'll put it to you that way. They had brought previously operations people in to try to solve the problem, and they came at it from a very operational viewpoint. They had a plan, and there was a Microsoft Gantt chart, and you know, we're gonna go, and many times they've solved problems for us, but they sometimes put the burden of it on the customers or the partners. So they thought if they had somebody that would solve the problem with a customer and partner viewpoint, they'd get a different outcome. It was a very risky move for me to make, because I'm not a trained operations person, right? I'm not an engineer like Sri Devi. I don't have a background in operations and that type, logistics, any of that, IT, all of which were key requirements for the job. And I did it as a pilot for the company so that if it worked, they were going to stand up a massive shared service for our entire back office. So nothing like a little pressure and a few eyes on you. So I actually went and did it. I learned all about things like Microsoft Gantt charts and, you know, amazing things that I never knew before. And it was probably the finest thing I ever did for my entire career. It was very risky. I did it because I had a sponsor. So you heard that at lunch today, I think from Sally. Mm-hmm. The person that asked me to take that job became my personal sponsor, was not my mentor, he was my sponsor. He covered my back, and we went and made amazing things happen, and we actually ultimately, the company, the board of directors, decided to take all of our operations at Cisco and put them into a single shared service a year and a half ago because of that. I got to go back to sales to a bigger job, but I will tell you guys, it's astonishing. Every single day in a sales job, I use things I learned in the operations job. So you don't have to move up to learn. I would tell you, go to where something needs to get fixed, because that creates opportunity. And if you're willing to take the risk and go try to fix something, the rewards can be really huge. And you'll be stunned at what you learned and how good you can be at things you never thought you could do.
One last question, then we're going to wrap it up.
Save the best for last.
That's right.
So thank you, ladies, for a wonderful experience. And I'm Sean Sims-Finkley. I'm with Cisco as well. And I'm looking for a mentor. So if any one of you are available.
No, well, the question is, you want a mentor or sponsor? Two different things.
Sponsor.
They're voting. Your friends are voting for you.
So my question is around my career. I've been a people manager in services for over 5 years, and I've worn many hats. I've been an engineer. I've been in sales, dev test. Now I'm in services, which I love. But I've been doing this role for 5 years. I'm told 2 to 4 years, you need to move on. Do you agree with that?
I can
go ahead, Sri Devi.
Unlike Debbie, who had a sponsor who inspired her to make a transition in her career, I was exactly the opposite. I felt I was maxed out, similar to the question that was asked earlier, on my engineering career, that I felt the only other thing I could get is some more engineering, and then some more engineering. And that felt like a death trap to me. I mean, there are so many people who like that career, it just wasn't for me. So I motivated myself to make a shift into product management and marketing, and by God, it was the hardest thing I have ever done, because at a director level, moving from an engineering function to a marketing function in a company which is already established like Cisco is not easy. There were a lot of sponsors, there were a lot of people willing to cover me for that, but it's just difficult to make that switch, because there are people who did that for years and years and who are going to be better than you at that. So the only way I was able to do that is to listen again and learn and allow myself to do, and I think Sheryl Sandberg talks about this in her book, is the jungle gym, which I otherwise call the crab walk. You should be willing to walk sideways before you can actually walk upwards, right? It's not, growth is not always vertically bound, especially in the world we live in today. So you have to think about how you can grow your career even sideways into different functions and then focus on going towards the top.
And I would say, so I never put a timeline on anything, because typically opportunities are driven by changes in the business, right? Mm. And there's all kinds of things that could change, none of which any of us can predict with any kind of precise timeline that in 2 to 4 years those changes will occur and, you know, all these things will fall in place and then you can move on to your next deal. So I would say, first of all, I don't think you have to ascribe to any particular timeline to think that you're doing the right thing for your career. To Sri Devi's point, I actually think much more of growth in corporations going forward will be, you know, back and forth. It will be, to Cheryl's point, going back and forth across mm-hmm. the jungle gym and creating a much broader set of expertise in areas that you've got experience in. It doesn't necessarily mean that things will go up. Mm-hmm. And I would also say you don't have to change organizations. If you love what you do and it's your personal passion and you enjoy it, stay in the team. There's nothing wrong with doing that because change will happen. The team will change. The requirements of the customers will make you do something different every single day. The processes will change. Things will even change within the same team so that it makes the job different every day. But I don't think yeah. anyone should feel compelled to move.
And that's how I feel. I'm challenged every single day. These two women up here can agree with that. We're challenged every day. So I'm, yep. you know, and so why move?
Exactly. Yeah. I think you're good.
Yeah, you know, the other thing about it too is that, and Debbie had talked about this, your network, continue to grow your network. That has been the best thing in my career because it's opened opportunities for me that haven't been open, or they created opportunities for me that I created through the network of getting enough people to sponsor and take on a, you know, created. I created three of my own jobs inside of the company.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you guys.
All right.
Thank
I need
you so
to,
much.
Oh. We do,
you can
you
come
know,
up
there's going to be questions. They'll be here for a second, so the, feel free to step up, but we do need to wrap. I wanted to take a minute and, first of all, thank each and every one of you for taking a day out of a very busy career and a life to invest in yourself and participate. These conferences are special, and there is a theme and a heartbeat that lives in this room that you're going to want tomorrow. You're going to be a little starved for it, so soak it up while we're here. There's a little bit of a conference left, and then I really do want to thank these three women. I've had the pleasure to work with all of them to give of their time. You compliment me with your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, you guys.